Today is Tuesday, January 12th, and you're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Okwo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, U.S. House Democrats prepare to vote to impeach President Trump.
If the Vice President and Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Also ahead, Facebook shuts down network accounts linked to Uganda's Ministry of Information.
The Facebook accounts shut down were allegedly linked to the Citizens Interaction Center at the Ministry of Information.
Plus, the FBI warns of violence across the U.S. These stories and more are next. The U.S. House of Representatives is preparing to vote to impeach President Donald Trump this week following the violent breach of the U.S. Capitol by the president's supporters that left five people dead. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports on the Democrats' options for removing Trump just days before his term ends.
Just days after President Trump's supporters stormed the U.S. Capitol to stop the electoral vote count certifying President-elect Joe Biden's win. House Democrats, seen here evacuating the House chamber during the January 6th attack, are now acting to remove President Donald Trump.
Amendment to declare President Donald J. Trump incapable of executing the duties of his office.
Their first step? A resolution calling on Vice President Mike Pence and a majority of Trump's cabinet members to invoke the 25th Amendment in the next 24 hours, declaring the president unfit for office. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi.
If the Vice President and Cabinet do not act, the Congress may be prepared to move forward with impeachment.
Despite rioters' calls for his hanging for refusing to overturn the election results, Pence is not expected to take that step. A vote on impeachment instead could come as early as midweek.
We need angry patriots to fill the House.
Charging Trump with incitement of insurrection for his statements on his now suspended Twitter account and for remarks to supporters immediately before the January 6th Capitol riot. President Donald Trump.
And if you don't fight like hell, you're not going to have a country anymore.
With a little over a week before Biden's inauguration, Democrats say they can act fast. Democratic Representative Ted Lieu.
This was all out in the open. This was open incitement of people to stop Congress from accepting the certified Electoral College results.
That would make Trump the first president in U.S. history to be impeached twice. George Washington University School of Law professor Paul Berman.
A sitting president inciting an insurrection against the United States government is perhaps the worst thing that a president could ever possibly do. That statement needs to be made. Second, and more pragmatically, if he were impeached and convicted, that would prevent him from running for office in the future.
There is some Republican support for congressional action holding Trump accountable for his actions. Republican Representative Adam Kinzinger.
I think the best thing would, for the country to heal would be for him to resign. The next best thing is the 25th Amendment.
But Democrats already have the votes for impeachment. They will likely wait to send the article over to the U.S. Senate until later this year. An impeachment trial would stop all other Senate business, hampering Biden's first 100 days in office with a new Democratic majority in both chambers. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
As Democrats and some Republicans push for President Trump to resign or be removed from office, many people are asking what are the broader implications for American democracy and the challenges facing a divided Republican Party. Those are the questions International Edition's Steve Miller put to Augusta University political science professor Craig Albert.
The GOP, since the nomination of then-candidate Trump, has been going through an identity crisis, trying to understand whether they should coalesce the party or solidify the party around Donald Trump, or if the party was something distinct and that Trump was just an anomaly in the party. So this is something the Republican Party has been dealing with for a long time. And I think that now they're being forced to deal with this. Like, is this the party of Trump and going to continue with Trump rhetoric and Trump policy and Trump politics moving forward, or is it going to reinvestigate itself and return to some sense of the establishment idea of the Republican Party? So this is something that I think now, where they have refused to have done so in the past, Republicans are having to look at this. They're having to investigate who they are and who they want to be, not just as a political party, but as a voice for Americans moving forward. So they are certainly in an existential identity crisis as of now.
So let's step back and take a look at the broader picture. What does this mean for American democracy moving forward?
Well, for funding, we know that most companies are suspending their fundraising or donations to any PAC that's related to anybody that has anything to do with the insurrection on January 6th or moving forward that might have some ideas of wanting to challenge the certification of the vote. So that's one aspect, is that we know that fundraising, at least for those associated with the Republicans, is going to take a huge hit. Never mind what might happen for marketing or advertising on different platforms, if candidates will be able to even advertise on different platforms moving forward that were associated with this or that voted against certification of the Electoral College. For the broader picture of American democracy moving forward, I can't emphasize enough that the United States has taken a hit. It took its first hit by people saying that there was fraud committed for the election, which, as a political scientist, I'm trying to look at this objectively. And if there was fraud, as a political scientist, I want to be the first to put it out there so that people can understand it and fix it. That has not happened. There's no evidence of it. It doesn't exist. This is politicking for the sake of staying in power and getting reelected. And it goes against the American institutions and the Constitution. It just doesn't make sense. It hurts us moving forward. So that's a serious, you know, America took a hit because of this idea, and that so many people bought into the idea. Because, of course, they're going to believe the president, that the president has information saying that it was more fraudulent than in actuality where it wasn't fraudulent. So that's one point. The second point for the insurrection on January 6th, that's going to be a Pandora's box, because people were assured that nothing like that could ever happen, even from a security personnel standpoint in the United States Capitol. And now that cat is out of the bag. Now it's understood that something can happen. And so there are bad forces in the United States seeking to take advantage of that, and they're already planning that. So this sets a precedent that people that want, that whose elections didn't go their way, that they can use armed insurrection or forced rebellion to get what they want. And that is not the way the American system is supposed to operate. We're supposed to be institutionally understood. And if you don't like the way an election happened, you only have to wait two more years to make some type of change peacefully to go your way. So this is an anxiety-ridden time for everybody in America, including political scientists, because it's something that perhaps we should have been more open to. We just never thought would happen here, and we didn't study it, and we didn't try to analyze events that could happen here. We do that in other countries, but now we're having to look at ourselves and look at the discipline and investigate what are further things that could happen here.
That's International Edition's Steve Miller speaking with Augusta University political science professor Craig Albert. The New York State Bar Association is considering the expulsion of Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani over incendiary remarks made just before last week's Capitol incursion. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn reports.
The New York State Bar Association says its bylaws call for the removal of anyone who advocates the overthrow of the U.S. government. It's opened an inquiry into former New York mayor and Trump lawyer Rudy Giuliani. Last Wednesday, Giuliani rallied Trump supporters, calling for trial by combat. One state lawmaker who's called for his expulsion said, quote, Giuliani is an embarrassment to attorneys everywhere, and also called on the state courts to disbar him to ensure that he will never again, quote, use his law degree to destroy lives and undermine our democracy. I'm Jackie Quinn.
Meanwhile, there are growing fears of nationwide violence as Joe Biden's inauguration approaches. AP Washington correspondent Sagar Magani reports.
The FBI is warning of the potential for armed protests by Trump loyalists leading up to next Wednesday in all 50 state capitals and here in the nation's capital, where the Washington Monument's been closed to the public amid threats. Even as the Bureau warned of heightened terror fears, acting Homeland Security Secretary Chad Wolf abruptly resigned.
And security has been stepped up at state capitals amid new safety concerns. AP correspondent Mark Gracia reports.
Angry protesters outside the Washington State Capitol Monday offered a snapshot of scenes that are playing out across the nation. State capitals have beefed up security, in some cases activating the National Guard, with the FBI issuing a bulletin warning of plans for armed protests at all 50 state capitals ahead of President-elect Joe Biden's inauguration next week. In Olympia, Washington, where state troopers were heckled by protesters, Sergeant Darren Wright of the Washington State Police told the Associated Press,
"The Washington State Patrol has been tasked with providing security and making sure that the legislature is able to conduct their business safely."
By the end of the week, more than three-fourths of all state legislatures will have opened their sessions. I'm Mike Gracia.
The United States on Monday imposed sanctions on several Ukrainian individuals and entities over U.S. election interference. VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden is following the story and provides this update to my colleague, Steve Miller.
The new sanctions announced today by the Department of Treasury in the U.S. targeting seven individuals, four entities, and all of them are said to be part of this Russian-linked foreign influence network associated with a Ukrainian member of parliament, Andrei Deripaska. Deripaska first was talked about publicly by the U.S. intelligence community back in September of 2020, months before the election, and when the director of the National Counterintelligence and Security Center, Bill Evanina, singled him out in a warning about election interference, saying that Deripaska was spreading claims about corruption in an effort to help Russia undermine the candidacy of now President-elect Joe Biden. So his name was put out then. He was sanctioned, around September. And then now Treasury is going after some of his associates, including former Ukrainian government officials, one current member of parliament, and four companies that form his disinformation operation.
Has any information been released as to the timing of these sanctions? Because, you know, leading up to the 2020 election, there had been a lot of information put out there by the intelligence community about election interference. So what can you tell us about the timing of things?
Well, one of the things that President Trump actually signed back in 2018 was an executive order designed to take aim at any foreign entity, any foreign country trying to interfere and trying to meddle with U.S. elections. And so he signed this executive order. And as part of it, it allowed for sanctions to be levied against anybody who the U.S. concluded had tried to meddle. Specifically, it said 45 days after the election, the intelligence community needed to submit a report saying on basically summarizing what they saw and determining whether anyone actually did try to meddle with the election. That report was due this past December, December 18th. It was not handed in on time. It's a report from the Office of the Director of National Intelligence. It was just submitted to Congress last week and presumably to the other entities that needed to review this, including the Department of Homeland Security and the U.S. Attorney General. Now, the sanctions are coming under this executive order. It's unclear, though, whether the timing has anything to do with the submission of that report. Now, remember, even before the election took place, even before U.S. voters went to the polls, the intelligence officials came out, including the director of national intelligence, including the director of the FBI, and said they had seen two cases where both Iran and Russia had been trying to steal voter registration information and used it, in Iran's case, to send fake emails to voters trying to intimidate them before they went to the polls. So it's likely that the U.S. intelligence community concluded that Russia and Iran meddled with the elections. We also know repeatedly from comments from the director of national intelligence that he and others believe China also sought to meddle with the elections. But whether or not there will be more sanctions in the coming days, either against entities related to Russia or against Iran or China, remains to be seen.
That's VOA's national security correspondent Jeff Selden speaking with my colleague Steve Miller. This is the Voice of America. Malaysia's king has approved a coronavirus emergency that will suspend parliament and hold off calls for elections in a political reprieve for the embattled Prime Minister Muhyiddin Yassin. Muhyiddin assured citizens the emergency was, quote, not a military coup and curfew will not be enforced, unquote. The emergency will last until April 1st or earlier, depending on the situation. The Irish government is poised to make a formal apology for decades of abuses in church-run homes for unmarried women and their babies, where thousands of infants died and were sometimes buried in mass graves. final report of an inquiry into the mother and baby homes is to be published on Tuesday. Prime Minister Michael Martin is expected to apologize on behalf of the Irish state later in the week. Church-run homes in Ireland house orphans, unmarried pregnant women and their babies for most of the 20th century. The Sunday Independent newspaper, which disclosed leaked details of the report, said it found that one in seven or four children born in the homes died, far above Ireland's national infant mortality rate. Indonesian officials say rescuers are searching for 26 people still missing after two landslides hit a village in West Java province over the weekend. At least 13 people were killed and 29 injured in landslides that were triggered by heavy rain on Sunday in Cihajuan, a village in West Java's Samdang district. Some of the victims were rescuers from the first landslide. National Disaster Mitigation Agency spokesperson Radhika Jati said Tuesday that a search and rescue operation has been hampered by rainy weather around the disaster site and said seasonal rains and high tides in recent days have caused dozens of landslides and widespread flooding across much of Indonesia. You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Facebook has shut down several accounts of a network in Uganda linked to the country's Ministry of Information. The social media company accused the network of using fake accounts to promote the ruling party and the president. Halima Atumani reports from Kampala.
The Facebook accounts shut down were allegedly linked to the Citizens Interaction Center at the Ministry of Information and Communications Technology. In a statement, Facebook accuses the account holders of using fake and duplicate accounts to manage pages, comment on other people's content, impersonate users, and reshare posts in groups to make them appear more popular than they were. Duncan Abigaba, the deputy head of the center, says their accounts were targeted because of their support for Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni and the ruling National Resistance Movement, or NRM. Abigaba says the action by Facebook is unfair since members of the opposition National Unity Platform Party, led by singer-turned-politician Bobi Wine, have been using social media to promote Wine's presidential candidacy.
So NRM had tried and sell our candidate as well in the social media space. So by selling the candidate, it means you have to employ different tactics, including you put out content, and this content, you must share it in different groups for it to have as much reach as possible.
The Uganda Communications Commission wrote to Facebook and Twitter late last year, demanding it shut down several accounts it said were being used wrongly by members of the opposition National Unity Platform. Government spokesman Ofwono Pondo says the commission received a response from Facebook saying it would investigate the claims, but instead, says Opondo, without any due process, accounts of NRM supporters have been shut down.
They have not told us the nature of the complaint. They have not written even to say we are going to switch you off. And so it is a double standard. And that ties very, very well with what our intelligence is telling us, that some of the opposition is working with foreign interests.
The Ugandan government is already disabling some social media platforms currently, unless one is using a virtual private network. Videos on Facebook cannot be played. The Uganda Communications Commission has also ordered app stores to block over 100 virtual private networks being used by citizens to bypass the blockage. Joel Senyonyi, the National Unity Platform spokesperson, denies the party has a hand in the account shutdowns.
We actually wish we had a hand in it. We'd actually love to see all the government accounts blocked because they're using them to justify all the ills that are happening. You know, that people get killed, and then you see government officials and regime apologists and functionaries go on social media, and then they justify the killing of people and so on.
Ugandans go to the polls Thursday with Museveni seeking to extend his 34-year run as president. Bobi Wine has called off his final campaign appearances due to multiple arrests and police breaking up his rallies. Halima Athmani for VOA News, Kampala.
That's Halima Atumani reporting from Kampala. Saudi Arabia and its allies are welcoming a move by outgoing U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo late Sunday to begin placing Yemen's pro-Iranian Houthis on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. Iran's foreign ministry condemned the decision, and VOA's Edward Uranian reports for VOA from Cairo.
Saudi-owned media applauded the announcement by U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo that he will ask Congress to place Yemen's Houthi militia group, which controls the capital Sana'a, on the list of state sponsors of terrorism. The decision follows last month's Houthi drone attack on Aden Airport, controlled by the rival Yemeni government of President Abdrabu Mansour Hadi. Pompeo indicated in a tweet that the action was intended to confront the Houthis' terrorist activity and deter further malign activity by the Iranian regime in the region. Iran and its Lebanese Hezbollah proxy militia reportedly arm and train the Houthis. Ahmed bin Mubarak, foreign minister of the Saudi-backed Yemeni government, told Arab media that the U.S. decision was made to punish the Houthis for various terrorist acts, including the recent attack on Aden Airport, which killed and wounded dozens, attacks on Red Sea shipping, and Houthi missile attacks on Saudi Arabia. Houthi spokesman Mohammed al-Bukhaiti told Arab media that the U.S. decision was destined to fail and would make negotiations more difficult, in addition to making the Houthi group stronger. Saudi analyst Majid al-Turki told Qatar's Al Jazeera TV that he did not think the move would make negotiations more difficult, saying Kuwait tried for months to conduct negotiations between rival Yemeni forces and was unable to broker a deal. Iranian Foreign Ministry spokesman Saeed Khatibzadi said in a press conference Monday that the decision marked, in his words, the bankruptcy of the outgoing Trump administration. The Yemen conflict, he added, must come to the negotiating table sooner or later. Khatar Abu Diab, who teaches political science at the University of Paris, tells VOA that there is a political dimension to the U.S. move, since the Trump administration would like to make the Houthis sit down at the negotiating table and accept a U.N.-brokered settlement of the Yemen conflict. Iran-based analyst Imad Abshans told Arab media that the administration only has 9 days left and then everything is going to change. Paul Sullivan, a professor at the National Defense University in Washington, however, thinks that revoking a terrorism designation is not simple and that with everything that is going on in Washington, this is going to take the back burner. He said a lot of people in Washington find Iran a threat to the U.S. and that the Houthis are seen as an ally of Iran. He said it doesn't seem likely that things are going to improve for them, even under the Biden administration. Joe Biden will be inaugurated as the 46th president of the United States on January 20th. Edward Uranian for VOA News, Cairo.
That's VOA's Edward Uranian reporting from Cairo. The Trump administration is asking states to speed delivery of COVID-19 vaccines to people older than 65 and others at high risk by no longer holding back the second dose. Health and Human Services Secretary Alex Azar says the Trump administration is recommending opening up vaccines to everyone older than 65 and to get the vaccines to more people by not holding back the second vaccine dose. States determine who gets the vaccine based on federal guidance. That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokabe Olubaro, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great evening.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat.
African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makosa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the